coming up on Thunder Pop.
Man, oh man. Here we are, another episode. It's summer. It's summer in the city.
In Texas.
It's summer in Texas, and we're in our flip-flops, we're in our shorts, just kind of already feeling the sort of the summer. It's not summertime blues yet, though, is it?
No, not yet. Until we start hitting those seven straight triple-digit days.
Yeah, and it's not the dog days of summer. That's be a few months from now. Yeah, when you said we start hitting those big digits. But speaking of big digits, this is episode number 18 of the Thunder Pop Podcast, and Johnny Lightfoot is back.
I am back.
And we're going to talk today. This is going to be first of a two-parter. In this episode, we're going to break down, each of us, three of the sequels that should have never been made, in our opinion.
Yes. And there's so many bad ones, it was hard for me to pick three, but I think I've got it.
Oh, man. It's like Christmas at the toy store, and I can't decide what I want first and last.
Exactly.
And I have to, you know, yeah, so that's like that. And then I got a big announcement at the top of the show, something I've been kind of holding on close to, and I haven't, it's been hard to keep hush on it, but I'm going to go ahead and make a big announcement of something that is pending, not quite official yet, but it's I'm just going to go ahead and roll it out as we play the theme music. We'll come right back into that, and then of course we'll have our usual agree or disagree and some thoughts and advice for that bootay.
There we go.
Yeah, and we're back. Johnny Lightfoot, episode number 18. We're legal now.
We're legal.
In most states. I think it would cover all 50 states, actually. We might be legal. We might have been legal in some states at the last episode, the 17.
17, yeah.
In some state. Well, for some things, not...
Yeah.
But anyway, we're getting just terribly creepy
Just creepy old dudes.
Just getting totally creepy old dude here.
That's what I love about these high school girls, man. I get older, they stay the same age.
Gonna make a big announcement. Just sort of wacky. I am a finalist to be a contestant on the Food Network's new spinoff series, Worst Bakers in America. Yeah, so I went through a process, and I actually got in kind of late in the process. They were already just a few days left in their cutoff time to submit. I was on Craigslist one day, and I go to Craigslist, I look at the free stuff section, what kind of free stuff is being given away. I look at the barter section, I look what kind of cheap stuff people are selling. Mm-hmm. And then I navigate over to the TV, film, radio section from time to time just to see, because I'm nosy, I want to see what people are doing, like around town.
Yeah.
Casting calls or scams and people putting together their fake porns.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to lure unassuming women to their apartments.
Yeah.
And so I can be a narc and call them out on it. And then there it was, the Food Network casting for the Worst Cooks in America and the Worst Bakers in America, which is going to be the spinoff. It'll be his first season, his inaugural season. It's a spinoff to the Worst Cooks in America. And I'm a pretty okay cook. I thought I was maybe not going to be bad enough as a cook to be considered as a worst cook in America. Mm-hmm. But I saw that Worst Bakers in America. I said, that's right up my alley.
Because especially if you got to make it from scratch.
Yeah, and see, that's more of a science. The thing with cooking is you can improvise. Sometimes, like in my case, I come up with these masterpieces, And then other times, not so much. Maybe I'll order a pizza tonight.
Yeah.
You know. But then on the baking, though, that's more of a science where you can't not improvise.
Food you can definitely experiment, and you can make concoctions, and you're like, this could be good, or it could be horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But baking can fall flat.
It falls flat many times. Sometimes it falls flat. Sometimes it falls apart. Sometimes it slivers across the pan.
Mm.
I've had fire departments called. I've had been asked to leave apartments as a result of some of my baking expeditions. And
get those pies that explode.
The pie, yeah. I've had a few of those. So the process required that I went in and put a audition. First of all, I did it. I sent them, I fill out this application, basic application, and just information on... why I should be the worst baker in America, or why I should be a contestant in the worst baker in America. And then after that, I got a call 30 minutes out after the application was submitted, which I was way surprised. I saw the call. It was Burbank, California. I was like, oh, this is either another scam telemarketer, which is what it usually is, or somehow I already getting a call for worst bakers in America.
Man.
So I pick up the phone, and it was this really nice lady. She's a casting director for the Food Network, and she just loved my application, said it was hilarious. She got a kick out of it. I sent this really funny picture of me and my pug dog, Gus, and where I'm in my bathrobe, and we're both fighting over the remote control to determine what we're going to watch on TV. And I think thanks to Gus, she loved that picture so much. She was a dog person. Thanks to Gus, I got a call. You know, so I always ride the coattails.
There you go.
When nothing else works, you ride the coattails of cute dogs into whatever you're trying to get in.
Exactly.
Whether it's into a job interview, or whether it's into a casting for a show, or trying to get in with a girl, if you're trying to get with a girl. So, a cute dog. There you go. So, she called me. We did a little conversation on the phone for a little bit. And then she says, I'm going to go ahead and put you in the pile of, because we were already at the deadline for submitting, but I'm going to go ahead and move you straight to the line for the second part of this process. Man. And she said, I think that this is you're great, and we want to have you. And I'm like, oh man, you're just being too nice. So I come back a week later. I have to make I had 48 hours.
Oh man, talk about up against the clock.
I had to put together a video of me baking a melted chocolate cake, which was my selection. They gave me a choice of what I wanted to bake. I did a melted chocolate cake, and I had to... Which, by the way, if you ever make a melted chocolate cake, I made the recipe that they serve on Carnival Cruise ships. It's one of their signature desserts. And so Carnival Cruise wants to give me a free cruise for mentioning them on this podcast. Carnival Cruise, Carnival Cruise, Carnival Cruise, and their melted chocolate cake will make your day.
Yeah.
Again, Carnival Cruise wants to give me a free, me and my wife, a free trip to the Caribbean. We'll gladly take it.
Hey, if you got to spit some names.
Carnival Cruise. Hashtag Carnival Cruise 2016. So anyway, I got the idea because this recipe, they make this dessert. It's delicious. It's a chocolate melted cake. So I had to find out where you could buy ramekins. Mm-hmm. Which is what we were eating that guacamole out of before the cast. And I had to go get a ramekin, and it went to World Market. I did a search, and I put it up on Facebook where I could buy I don't know if it's ramekins or ramekins. I still haven't figured that out.
Ramekin.
Ramekin. Oh, okay. So it's ramekin. So I went to the World Market, bought two ramekins, and I had 24 hours to knock out this recipe. It was 10 o'clock at night when I finally started on it because I had to have it in by the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
So it turned into a 40-minute video that took forever to get on YouTube. Because if you make anything over half an hour, 20 minutes, it's about a day of hit or miss to try to figure out how to get it to load up on YouTube. At least it was for me. Finally, I got it to load up. The movie I finished, the motion picture that I finished was loaded up. And there's a ton of chocolate and butter. If you knew how much chocolate and butter is in that little ramekin of melted chocolate cake, you would make an immediate beeline to the emergency, the hospital, to have your heart, veins or whatever it is, pumped, all the butter pumped out of your system.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just cholesterol.
Oh, it's a cholesterol's nightmare. It's not just chocolate. It's not just antioxidant chocolate.
Yeah. And Paula Deen's heaven.
It's Paula Deen's heaven. It's Paula Deen floating on a melted chocolate cake with a being racist.
Yeah. I was going to say, would she really do it on a chocolate cake, though?
Yeah, true. Yeah,
it would be a white chocolate cake.
Yeah, it'd be on a white chocolate. But or she, if she was really, because she's trying, been trying to get back in for so long, she might just do the chocolate cake just to try to make it look like she's trying to be, you know, more, you know, cool and and with it.
Yeah, more PC.
Yeah, more PC. So anyway, I had to make this video. Then I had to do a Skype interview with another casting director where I had to look at the camera. And they would ask me a question, and then it was like Jeopardy. I had to repeat the question they were asking me, and then I'd have to give the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably the hardest part because it was so awkward to look at that part of my computer while I was talking to someone that was on the screen.
Yeah,
I think it almost would have been easier if they had done audio.
Right.
Because then it would have been more natural for me to look up at the little... Because you can't even see the camera on my laptop.
Yeah.
It's just a little dot.
See, what you do is you get one of those little gold stars teachers used to give you. And then just put the gold star there.
And I should have done that. If I had known better, I would have done that. So, and when I don't make it on this season and I try to go for the second, to get on the second season, I will be more savvy about, I'll do the gold star and I will, but then by the time I might, because I'll be prepping, I might actually be one of the best bakers by that time.
Oh,
I won't even get it on the, I don't know. So anyway, yeah, I made the video, did the audition. I'm supposed to find out in the next few days whether I made it in. If I get in, I go to LA. I would be there for towards sometime in July, starting in July through sometime in August. I think I think it'd be mid July to mid August. Now that's if I would
continue. Yeah,
continue. I could be back in a week.
Yeah, if you lose in like the first round.
Yeah, I might be back home before the 4th of July, and you know that would be it. Or if I made it a couple of weeks, a couple of rounds, I could be there for 2 weeks. If I make it all the way to the end, it's about, I think, a 4 or 5 week in LA commitment. Yeah. The winner gets $25,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume that's in cash, not just $25,000.
Well, I had a friend, she actually won an episode of Cutthroat Kitchen.
That's a funny show, yeah.
My friend, Anna Maria, she's an executive chef.
I did not know that.
For Eddie V's, and they had her on there. Uh-huh. And she's like this 4'11" little petite girl, and she was going up against some big guys.
Yeah.
And but she made it through the end, and I want to say by the end she ended up with like $19,000 something.
And that's on Cutthroat.
Yeah, that's where you're actually, you have to bet, you know,
place bids. So they'll fork out some money over the Food Network.
Mm-hmm. And nobody was going after her, you know, making
her, because she's short, so little, cute.
By the end, the other guy just didn't have any money left. So she was just giving him everything.
I'm going to have to find that. I would like to see the episode with her, the local person.
I think there's one on YouTube.
Sometimes they pop up. Yeah, because I was able to go back and watch the worst cooks in part of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And they were on YouTube, so they surface on there sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I made to make a YouTube video, which is not, it's only shared privately. It's not for the public.
Right.
But if I don't get in the show, I'm going to re-edit the video, and then I'll put it up on the ThunderPop website.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do a shortened version of it with all the best parts. Because it's a motion picture right now. It's
40 minutes.
It's the Titanic right now of YouTube clips.
So here it is. The recipe. It calls for 8 ounces of semi-sweet chocolate. So I have one of the best. So I've got the sugar. This is the powdered sugar. So we do have powdered sugar. I was at the store earlier and I was trying to remember if we had it. I didn't buy any, and I lucked out and we still had some. Okay. Regular sugar, and I hope this is regular sugar and not salt. Okay, so I'm gonna bake at 375. It's kind of late, 10 o'clock, almost 10 o'clock, but I'm gonna get it done. Got a preheat. Actually, hold on, off. Preheat 375, and I want to put it in baking mode. Shoot, we got this new stove. I'm trying to. Preheat 375, bake. Oh shoot. Bake 375, preheat.
Start.
Yeah. I'm just nervous.
So
they're already saying, wait, he can't even function an oven.
Yeah, so and they told me, they gave me very specific instructions not to stage anything, not to fuck up a bundt cake or whatever. Just if it turns out, whatever it turns out. And that was, so that's really me not knowing what the hell I'm doing there when I'm trying to set the...
Shit, we got this new stove.
The preheat... I've always had preheat setting issues with that stove. And so that goes back to what I was setting it up. I say I'm very impatient. My problem with baking is I get very... That's sort of a flaw in many things I've done in my life where I've been... One of the flaws has been I could be very impatient.
Mm.
There I was, you know, I'd probably a hitman. I'd be a terrible hitman because I would probably take out people because I thought it was the person, but it's not because I didn't wait it out to make sure I was getting the right person.
Yeah.
So there would be a lot of people I'd accidentally take out before I got the person I was supposed to take out. So I would lose my jobs really quickly with the mob.
Yeah, and you wouldn't be one of those people who could just go sit in somebody's empty home waiting for him.
Like, wait, yeah, I wouldn't be able to do that. Stakeout. I wouldn't be able to do this. So anyway, that's me. So I'm already like, I don't want to learn how to preheat. I just want to be able to hit some buttons and do it what I'm trying to say. I want voice command. I want Siri on my stove. Yeah. It's like, Siri, please set the stove to preheat.
Freestyle rap.
I don't want to intimidate you with my deaf rhymes and sick beats. Okay, here goes. Apologies in advance to the Sugar Hill Gang. I said a hip hop, hit me to the hippie, the hip, hip the hop, and you don't stop. A rocket to the bang bang boogie, say, up jump the boogie to the rhythm.
So there it is. That's a little clip of my audition there, and maybe me not being able to start the stove could work to my advantage in getting on the show. We'll see. So there it is. Will I or won't I make it on Worst Bakers America Season 1? All right, when we come back, me and Johnny Lightfoot, we're each going to give us our big three, the sequels, the movie sequels that should have never happened.
Yes.
We each have our big three. And this is the first part of a two-part series. We're going to do the next one. We're going to do the three sequels that haven't been made that they should have made, our wish list.
Right.
So we'll be back here, uno momento.
Thunderpop was not recorded in front of a studio or audience.
Thunder poppin' in the Thunderdome. Getting slide on the mic there. Okay, so episode number 18 of the podcast. I'm Stephen Presley with Johnny Lightfoot from the Boy Wonder broadcast on YouTube.
Yes.
And where you can find him, he says he's going to have pretty quick here 6 new videos that are not in the can, but they're on their way.
Yes, they're shot. They're just needing a little bit of editing, and then we will be rolling those out shortly.
So we're going to get a lot of new content over the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the highlight? What's one right out of the gate we'll probably see first?
Well, first, and this one's actually edited. This is just me not having 20 minutes, 30 minutes free to upload it.
But yeah.
It's my Civil War, and I actually combined this time as opposed to just doing 2 separate videos. So the video is going to start with my intro, and then we're actually going to go to the edited shots of our reactions before and after the film at the Alamo Draft House.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And then I'm going to cut back to me doing, and then I'll give my spoilers review.
Oh, fun. I'm looking forward to that. So that'll be the first of the 6 new ones we're
going to
see.
That'll be the first. I have an old Force Awakens Han Solo Black series.
Oh, I've been looking forward.
That one's been filmed.
Looking forward to that one.
An FN-2187 Finn in the Stormtrooper with the blood.
Nice.
I have a Nightmare Batman.
I remember you telling me about the Nightmare Batman.
My newest one that I just shot literally 2 days ago is the brand new Marvel Universe Captain America, like the Civil War Black Series Captain America.
Oh, nice.
So that one's really new. I've only seen it once, and I snatched that thing up and filmed the review as quick as I could, and I'm going to get it out hopefully tomorrow.
Was that online, Disney Store? What did you find?
No, I just happened to see it in a Target. At a Walmart. Wow. Of all places. And usually they don't stock their toys very well.
Always the most random places. There was a store that we used to make fun of when I was a kid. I lived in small Texas. I grew up in, started off in a small Illinois town.
Mm-hmm.
We ended up in a small Texas town.
Mm-hmm.
Elgin.
Yeah.
My parents
good,
still...
Good sausage.
Oh, it's the sausage capital of the world, I think.
Oh, yeah.
It's his claim to fame. In fact, when I... The first time I was in... I lived in L.A. for a brief... I was there for a summer. And I drove there. So this, I made that god-awful drive across desert to get there with a car full of stuff and enough budget to probably get Taco Bell each meal between the time I was there on the way there to the time I got there. I get there, and I'm a little bit of a culture shock because the time I'd been to L.A. before that, I didn't have to do any driving. My friend drove everywhere. We had a rental car. We drove. He drove me everywhere. So first time actually having to drive in L.A.
Yeah, that's something else.
And I'm going from, you know, Texas, and suddenly I'm in L.A., and this is before Austin was starting to get kind of a little bit heavier in the traffic. I'm there, and I'm immediately, like, driving, like, 20 miles slower than everybody else.
Oh, man.
If not 30 miles slower than everybody else, and I got this car just comes, like, around me, zipping around. And it's, like, giving me that, like, you asshole look. And I roll my window down, because this car nearly ran me off the road. And probably right, they're probably right for that because it was grandma going down the road. Might as well have my blinkers going while I'm at it. And I roll my window down and say, "Hey, you can't do that. I'm from Elgin. We make sausage." And I yell that out, and I'm sure that impressed them
in
Hollywood. And they wanted to go ahead and immediately pull over and apologize for running me off the road like
pack
that.
Pack their bags and head to Elgin.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I think I was getting something else that was sort of in the shape of a sausage, but a little bit smaller, like waved at me. Two of them, double middle finger. But then, I caught up really quickly to the driving in L.A., and I actually became caught up probably one of the faster drivers, especially that time I pulled up to a stoplight, and I think I saw the same transgender prostitute that ended up with Eddie Murphy in his car.
Mm-hmm.
I think the same one tried to wave me down when I was at a stoplight near the Internet Cafe in Hollywood. But I'm trying to remember what the point of my story was, why I ended up talking about L.A. I know there was something to that.
Sausage.
Yeah, anyway, we make sausage comment in Elgin. So anyway, we are going to be breaking down in this episode our three sequels that should have never happened.
Yes.
By Johnny Lightfoot and Stephen Pressley. Johnny has got his three ready to go on deck.
I do. All right.
Get ready for the countdown. Three.
Yeah, number three. And it's funny because number three for me is actually widely considered by some the worst movie of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And there was even a documentary about it. And that movie is... Troll 2. So it boasts an astonishing 6% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh my gosh.
It had an amazing documentary about it called The Best Worst Movie.
I know The Best Worst Movie, but that was a terrific documentary about a terrible movie. Yes.
And it has some of the best quotables. Like, especially the one where the kid with the glasses and the slime's coming out of his friend's head, and he just stares at to the side of the camera and says, "Oh my God."
Yes. That should be a t-shirt, actually. Has someone done that t-shirt yet?
I would assume so, because I want it.
Yeah, it's a meme, I'm sure, too. Several memes of that.
But that movie is just so terrible from the acting, and then... the kid peeing on the dinner table.
Yes.
And then the dad takes him.
Well, I have dogs, and that's not too far off from something that probably has happened in real life.
But he takes the kid in the room and tightens up his belt and tells the kid, "Now I'm going to have to tighten my belt up, for I'm going to be having hunger pains because of you."
Yeah, that's probably one of the more infamous scenes of that movie that was talked about in the documentary. And then you've seen the documentary. Was it worst?
Oh,
Worst best movie?
Best worst movie.
Best worst movie, yeah.
And I believe it was actually Draft House Pictures that produced it.
I think you're right.
Because they even brought back the guy who played the dad. to do one of their no talk things.
Yeah.
And he was basically walking around saying, like, don't talk. And he would go into another room, don't talk. And then when he, at the end, he said something like, and the tagline said, like, don't talk or insert actor's name is going to tighten his belt because you're going to have him suffering from hunger pains. But that's my number three.
Is that going under the category of a movie that's so bad it's really good? Like, if you want to have a movie, terrible movie,
yeah,
that you can watch with your friends and kind of drink and sit there and sort of
exactly
make fun of it?
Because that's exactly what we did. We watched the best worst movie, and then Netflix just had happened to have Troll 2 on there.
Oh, you could have the trifecta, the back-to-backs.
Yeah, that night we had a bunch of us that had just gone to see the best worst movie.
Mm-hmm.
And we went home, had a couple of beverages, and watched Troll 2, and it was a good time.
It was on. I think this is the belt scene here. Let me see if this will...
And you can't piss on hospitality. I won't allow it!
What are you going to do to me, Daddy?
Tighten my belt by one loop so I don't feel hunger pains. And your sister and mother will have to do likewise. Okay, Joshua, you want to get rough with me? You want to show me that you don't like the choice of this house for our vacation by going on a hunger strike? Well, I'll accept the challenge. But just remember, when I was your age, I really did suffer from hunger. We'll see who gets through this. But just remember, I've got more practice than you. I'll see you tomorrow.
And that could have also been repurposed as an after-school special about appreciating not wasting your food.
I love that line, though. You don't piss on hospitality.
And then, I don't know if it's coming from the directing end of it or if it's the actor's fault, but the delivery of the lines. And maybe the lines are just so absurd, it would have been hard even for De Niro to go in there and, like, do it.
And this actor, he just has, like, a thick southern accent. And apparently now this guy is like, a lawyer or something.
Yeah, he was in some profession. I know one of them had become a dentist.
It's something like
somebody
that.
Somebody on the show.
No, wait, it's him. He's a dentist.
He's a dentist now. He's just like six.
And a very successful dentist.
Very successful dentist. And, you know, every now and again, if I went to him for a dentist, I hate going to the dentist. I don't know if anybody loves going to the dentist. But if he was my dentist, I'd have to have him, like, recreate.
But apparently, like, he's a real, real nice guy.
Yes, he seemed very nice. With it. He's got a good sense of humor about the whole thing.
Apparently, every year, they have a big screening where hundreds of people show up to watch Troll 2.
It's got a huge cult following.
And he will go show up to meet the fans. So
proving that you can be so bad that you can eventually become good in a bad way.
Exactly.
And then you can build a huge fan base off of that.
Yes.
Okay, number two.
Number two.
On Johnny's list of the sequels, the worst sequels ever.
Two.
All right, so for my number two, I have Jaws the Revenge.
Jaws the Revenge.
That's the fourth one.
Yeah.
And it currently sits at a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Whoa, zero. How do you get to be 0%?
Every single review on it is rotten. And
wow.
It boasts a 2 out of 10 in the critical consensus. And it has also won a Golden Raspberry for Best Actress. For
it
the
better.
Lady,
0%.
For the lady who's playing the late Rob Schneider's wife in the Jaws films.
I think I see a picture of her here where she's hanging out of the mouth of the shark.
But basically, the way this film's premise... the premise alone is enough to where they should have kind of thought to themselves, this is so stupid.
Mm-hmm. This is the fourth and the last one they made?
Yes, yeah. And this caused the end of the franchise.
This killed the franchise, which a really, really bad sequel has been known to kill some franchises.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. And basically the premise is, so this shark somehow has a psychic link with all the sharks that have been killed by the Brody family in the first three movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's out for revenge against just this one family.
Oh,
and so he kills the oldest Brody son in the opening sequence.
Mm-hmm.
So Ellen Brody decides, all right, I'm done with this shark. I'm leaving the Northeast and going somewhere tropical to her younger son, who is now a marine biologist, which you would think if your family has suffered from all this.
Enough of water problems.
Yes,
water issues.
That wouldn't be my profession of choice.
Go work in a desert somewhere. I'd want to go move to, like, the desert.
But yeah.
Start, like, something that involved Arizona.
Yeah, once this So she goes to this tropical island.
Yeah, of course.
To meet her younger son.
Stay close to the water.
And this shark goes all the way from the northeast of the U.S. to this island in the short time frame of a day. So this is some kind of super shark.
Oh, man. Can you imagine them brainstorming when they were trying, the studio is trying to come up with ideas of how they're going to do Jaws 4?
Not only
ideas
that.
Ideas being bounced around.
The shark has a roar. So the shark roars.
Oh, man. Is this now Netflix? I wonder if this is...
I don't know, because this would be another one. It got the Raspberry for the worst visual effects the year it came out. And another reason I hate this movie so much is it killed a franchise that I love the Jaws movies.
Love the franchise. And I've wondered for a long time. There's been some internet speculation about ways and possibilities of rebooting. I don't know how serious the studios are, but you'd have to think at some point it's going to happen, wouldn't you?
I mean, Superman, the quest for peace killed Superman for a little while. But, I mean, this is very near and dear to my heart because I started swimming when I was 4. I swam all the way through college and paid for the first 2 years of college. So I've always loved water. I love being in the water, but I respect the water.
Yeah.
When I'm in the ocean as a kid and I would swim way out there, there would be a little bit of adrenaline in me and in that there are things swimming around me that I can't see. But I still love the water, so that's why I hate this movie so much.
And people love sharks in drama. I mean, that's the Shark Weeks have been going on for I don't know how many years on cable TV.
Oh, yeah. I look forward to it every year.
And it's crossed over to multi-generations now. My nephew loves the Shark Week. It's the one thing that me and him definitely watch together. We both enjoy. My brother loves the Shark Week. My dad loves the Shark Week. Everybody seems to love the Shark Week. And if I was a competing network, I think it's Discovery that does the Shark Week.
Yes.
If I was a competing network, like Nat Geo, wanting to come up with my own version, I would call it something else. I mean, call it, you know, the Jaws of the Underwater Week or something. or it's not Shark Week, but something similar type of week. But I just to get, because you know it'd be a definite ratings getter is to have, you know, so people love sharks. They've done, I don't know how many sequels. They continue to do sequels to Jurassic Park. So why not try to revive this series? Obviously, Spielberg must not have had a big hand in this one. Was he out of it at that point?
Oh, yeah, he was out. He wasn't even producing or anything.
Was he only involved in 1 and 2?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the third one was not great. That's where they're in the aquarium.
Jaws 3D.
Yes, Jaws 3D. But, I mean, it wasn't terrible, but this one
is redeemable.
It's just awful.
Just on all levels, yeah. And there's a... And what shark wouldn't want revenge against the survivors of the men who killed it? Roger Ebert.
When it killed Sean, I knew with absolute certainty it had come for him. I knew that.
Michael Caine in this, too.
Yes!
I know it's coming.
Own it!
Jake is here. I just dropped the mother load. I'm counting.
So it's kids on a banana boat?
Yes.
Riding a banana boat, and then suddenly the shark... Man, how detailed do they get on the gums of that shark?
It looks kind of like bubble gum.
It looks like bubble gum just all pressed together, and then they sort of made these teeth out of like plastic.
And they're perfectly white.
They are perfectly... Well, that shark, man, it goes to the dentist from Troll 2.
Yes.
And makes sure it gets clean. So it just took out a girl that was on the banana boat in the trailer there. Yeah, you wonder why do these people keep going to places where there's water if they're trying to move on with their lives?
Yeah, especially if this particular area has already suffered through 3 different giant sharks, and now there's another one. I probably wouldn't go in there.
Do people get... Are there more shark attacks now than there used to be, or is it just sort of media and the coverage, or is there sort of a real environmental issue
where
it's causing sharks?
Over the last, I think it's like since like 2012 or 11,
uh-huh.
there's been a lot in the coast of Florida.
Yeah, that's where they seem to all be happening.
But not necessarily death, but mm-hmm. just attacks.
Yeah. It could be that those sharks are so damn... They think everybody in Florida is so damn... There's all this damn crazy stuff always seems to happen in Florida. Mm-hmm. Those sharks are like going there trying to...
Well, and now they've got that huge gator problem.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of alligators over there.
Here's an article. Where are all the great shark movies? It was The Guardian wrote that. One of the rumors that was coming up about a Jaws sequel that was a few years ago that I read, and it was a sort of the same suggestion that was put out there before they made Jurassic World. They were speculating on ideas for a Jurassic Park movie, and they weren't too far off on where they ended up going as far as the direction with rebooting the Jurassic Park series. But some of the same people speculating about where they might go with a Jurassic Park sequel had also speculated on the web about ideas for a Jaws sequel, reboot/sequel. And one of the ideas was that the sharks were somehow becoming genetically modified over time.
They kind of did that in Deep Blue Sea.
Yeah.
With Sam Jackson for a short minute, and then, gosh, what's his name, who ended up being the Punisher, and then LL Cool J was in it, but they had the sharks that could swim backwards and communicate.
But that movie's better than Jaws 4, I know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then there's one coming out here in, like, 3 weeks that I'm really...
Yes, another new
Shallows.
One. We are getting a new shark movie.
And me and a couple people were trying to see about... Draft House is actually going to screen it the day before at a lake.
Oh, they're going to do that. And weren't they going to do Jaws also?
They're also going to do Jaws on the water.
They're going to do back-to-backs?
I don't think it's all on the same day.
Uh-huh.
Same place. It's like a special edition inner tube that you'll get to keep.
Do you think... That's cool. Do you think that... That would be fun. That would be a fun way to see those movies. Do you think that there is a way to do a good Jaws reboot sequel?
I think it can be done. Mm-hmm. I think it can be done.
Do you think that the key is maybe getting back to basics? Kind of
yes,
what made the
absolutely.
Series what it was?
Because in the first one, part of its success was the fact that the shark broke.
Mm-hmm.
And so you couldn't see it as much because it was always getting broke.
Yeah.
So they had to rely more on the suspense and the music...
Which is what the inspiration of the style of that movie.
Yes,
is
and the, you know, pretending the camera is the shark, you know, that sort of thing.
It showed Spielberg's inspiration was Alfred Hitchcock for that for those movies. One of his biggest inspirations was Alfred Hitchcock.
Right,
and so he used a lot of Hitchcockian type stuff.
And it's another one of those things that shows you sometimes less is more.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, if Alfred Hitchcock had made a shark movie, it would have been Jaws.
Exactly.
And during his era movie making. All right. Now, number one on the Johnny Lightfoot list.
Number
one. Of the really, really bad sequels that should have never been made.
1-0.
And this is another one that's... It hurts me because it's a franchise so close to my heart.
I think I might know what it is, and it may be on my list too, but go ahead.
Number one, Batman and Robin.
Oh, well, it's not the one I thought, but it is going to be... it's going to come up again, possibly. Possibly. No spoiler alerts here.
Batman and Robin killed the franchise until Christopher Nolan came in with his greatness.
Dark Knight.
It boasts a impressive 11% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow, that's even lower than I would have guessed. I might have had it at 20%, but I would not have guessed it had gone as low as 11%. But, yeah. So, not as bad a movie as Jaws 4. Revenge. Not as bad a movie as Troll 2.
No.
But is it sort of the kind of movie that's not bad enough to be good? Like where Troll 2 is bad, so bad it's good, and where Jaws Revenge might even be so bad it's good. Is Batman and Robin just bad to the point where it's just sad?
It's bad to the point where it's sad. Because
it's sad.
For me, once I turned maybe 12, ever since then, I can't say I've ever watched this one all the way through. And I'm a huge Batman fan.
Me neither.
Troll 2 and Jaws' Revenge, those are ones where they're so bad, at least I can get entertainment from them.
Yeah, laughing at them.
Yeah, this one's so bad, it makes me mad.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes me mad.
Exactly. Really pisses me off when I...
And, I mean, the villains are just so lame. Batman's got a credit card.
4 million.
7 million.
Never leave the cave without it.
His utility belt?
Yes.
Yes.
The Batmobile has no roof, and there's all these neon lights, and they've got ice skates and play hockey, and they surfboard in the air.
Yeah.
It's they have cod pieces. I don't know how many butt shots are in that film.
Yeah.
Too many. Alicia Silverstone is Batgirl.
Batgirl.
Arnold Schwarzenegger is saying all-time one-liners like, have an ice day.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I forgot about have an ice day.
But, yeah, that's the one that really just, even just talking about
it. And apparently Stallone really wanted to play Mr. Freeze. You know how there was kind of a rivalry for years between Schwarzenegger and Stallone?
Uh-huh.
They both were always competing with each other, you know, to be the top action hero in town.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a little bit of jealousy back and forth between the two. When one was up and the other one might maybe not as up as the other, they were kind of jealous of the other. And so Stallone really, 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 apparently really badly wanted to be Mr. Freeze in Batman and Robin. And he was so pissed that it went to Schwarzenegger at the time. But I bet you now, looking back on it, he's like, yeah, that's one you can keep, Arnie.
Well, Stallone is actually just a huge Batman fan as well.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's probably one of the most famous fan films of all time. It's called Batman Dead End.
No.
Where he battles a predator and the aliens.
Where Batman battles the predator.
Mm-hmm. And there's even a documentary about it on like Hulu Plus about uh-huh. how it got this director his name out there, and like all of a sudden he was going to be big.
Oh, wow.
But it got to his head, and then he ended up kind of get out of it. But yes, it's called Batman Dead End. And at first, Stallone wasn't really working at the time.
It was kind of he had a down period where he was really literally doing straight to video movies,
mm-hmm.
action movies.
And so this director had a friend who knew Stallone, played golf with him.
Uh-huh.
And so he came to him and was like, hey, I know you're not really doing anything. This guy's got this really interesting Batman short film.
You know, this would be the hardest thing, though, is to figure out a way to, you want to keep his ego, like, from getting, you don't want to totally piss him off and say, I know you're, like, you know, you're making these shitty straight-to-video movies right now. But
like, maybe you'd like to do something that you would actually enjoy.
You want
to
be in my YouTube? No. Yeah, so he pitched it.
So he pitched it, and then the guy gets a call a couple days later, and it's like, hey, it's Sly. Yeah, I would actually like to do it. But then apparently, because then he eventually was getting, he got an offer to do a paid job for one of those said direct-to-video movies. He had to back out of it, so Stallone did not.
Stallone did. Mm-hmm. So what happened? So he wanted him to be in the fan film?
Yes, playing Batman.
Which was the Batman, what's it
Dead
called?
Dead End.
Dead End. So who ended up, is it another name actor? No. Or someone we've
just,
not?
Just some big guy.
That we've never heard yet, we've not heard of him, but it's somebody else that got the role. Wow. So he could have got Stallone. It would have even gone even farther
mm-hmm.
into the stratosphere.
Apparently, they played it at that San Diego Comic-Con that year. And they had, like, this little room that only seats maybe 80 people.
Wow.
And then right before the screening, there's only, like, 10 people in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then so the director's getting real nervous because this is a shot for somebody who's actually in Hollywood to see his film.
Yeah.
And then he's like, where is it? It's nobody coming. Uh-huh. And then, like, his friend comes up to him and goes, go outside the room, and he goes out, and the line is going around the building to where the fire department come and tell him they had to end the line and then restart the line somewhere else. And then after they finished screening it, everyone was chanting, play it again. And so they played it again for them.
Wow.
And
then how long is it?
Maybe 10 minutes.
Okay, yeah.
And so they played it through their time period they owned the room,
mm-hmm.
and then the San Diego people were like, hey, could we play this in Hall H, which is their big hall?
Wow.
Because this line is just too crazy.
But what year is this?
Early 2000s.
Yeah.
So it was in between when Batman and Robin killed it.
Yeah.
And then everyone was like, this guy needs to direct a real Batman film, but he never got it.
Because the hunger is always, even when the series was down, there was still hunger for Batman
mm-hmm.
content.
Oh, yeah.
But because they were trying to lay low for a little bit while they tried to figure out how to reboot it,
mm-hmm.
and sort of like when you do something that's kind of embarrassing, so you try to go away and hide for a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Before you show your face again.
Mm-hmm.
But the hunger was there. He was providing them sort of a little bit of Batman content that they weren't getting.
Exactly.
You know, we had the animated stuff kind of on the in-between, too, but when the Mark Hamill's, you know, Joker.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So, but then he kind of let the whole thing apparently go to his head. He could, instead of being able to take it and do further.
Basically, he was still wanting to be in complete control of his work, and he wasn't really.
You're not going to get that in the big time.
Like, okay, we're letting you in. Like, you got in, but now you're not listening to the people who let you in.
I mean, not even J.J. Abrams making a Star Wars movie is going to get total control over what he wants to do with that Star Wars movie. There's going to be some input.
There's probably two directors I can think of it on the planet that can do that, and that's Steven Spielberg, and that's James Cameron. And if you notice, you don't really see them pumping them out every year a movie.
No.
So...
They don't. And there's probably on smaller art films.
Yeah, on those you can have it. But if you're working within
the big time,
within
big budget,
Hollywood, yes.
Big blockbuster level.
If somebody's handing you a budget of $150, $200 million, you're going to have people to answer to, and it's not going to be just one.
And George Lucas probably had that when he was making the prequels.
Yes.
He was at that he was in an oasis period.
Exactly.
Kind of a period where he had that. And that's where why we did get some ridiculous stuff too, because he did have that. Sometimes that can be good, sometimes that can be bad.
Exactly, because when you're making these decisions, sometimes you need that producer or somebody to kind of rein you in. And like George, like I was telling you that one time about that thing on that extra on the episode one disc where they had just screened the final cut to all the producers and everyone at George's place, and everybody's just in silence when it ends.
Yeah, that infamous video clip.
And George just says, well, I guess it took it a little too far. Like, he needed those producers to kind of...
There's a little bit of that is good. I mean, too much of that is bad. Mm-hmm. When that happens, you get too many... The studio trying to push you too much. Mm-hmm. But then a little of it is actually can be good sometimes. Keep somebody from just a bunch of room full of yes men.
Oh, you don't need to park here, Mr. Griffin. You have an executive parking space now.
Well, that looks exactly like my old space.
Yeah, but this one comes with your own company suck-up.
Morning, Mr. Griffin. Nice day.
Well, it's a little cloudy.
It's absolutely cloudy. One of the worst days I've seen in years. So, good news about the Yankees.
I hate the Yankees.
Pack of cheaters. That's what they are. I love your tie.
I hate this tie.
It's awful. It's gaudy.
Exactly.
It's got to go.
Saying yes, yes. So there you go. The three,
that's my three
sequels on Johnny Lightfoot's list that should have never happened.
Yes.
The worst of the worst. Okay, now, my list. And there's one overlap, and it's my number three of my starting with the least worst of the worst, going to the worst of the worst.
Three.
Is an overlap with your number one, Batman and Robin, 1997.
You can't get away from that one.
You can't get away from Batman and Robin, 1997. Yeah, I mean, just going back to the utility belt, random crotch shots, the Batman butt shots, the overselling of that, the credit card and the utility belt. You know, and I just don't know if George Clooney was the right fit for Bruce Wayne, Batman.
No, and he wasn't necessarily huge at that time. I believe he had only been doing, what, ER?
ER, he might have already done Dusk Till Dawn.
Yes.
Which was great. But then, so that point, he was sort of kind of, like you said, he was on the upswing.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't like you were getting the biggest actor at that moment might have been Brad Pitt, if I remember correctly. And there was probably some others that I'm not thinking about. Will Smith, obviously, was already really big on the stratosphere with the Bad Boy movies. But yeah, then George Clooney, kind of more on the upswing, coming out of television, coming out of his role from ER, and was that movie could have very well killed everything for him.
Exactly.
And that's what's most impressive about George Clooney's career, is overcoming Batman and Robin so well.
Yes.
You know, and I think it may have even helped him in the long run, because then you saw after that he started to kind of go more for movies with a really rich story development, and not as so much the big blockbuster movies. I mean, he did have the Ocean 11 movies that he was doing, which you could put on kind of the blockbuster franchise level. But then a lot of the other movies, he's going for smaller, kind of more like story-driven movies, not necessarily those big, you know, kind of more of like a kind of thing that Brad Pitt has done, where Brad Pitt doesn't necessarily go for the Marvel superhero movies,
right,
the big blockbuster sci-fi movies. He kind of tends to go for more stuff that's more story-driven.
A little meaty.
Yeah, like more meaty in that, and a little bit, you know, kind of that direction. And George Clooney seems like maybe after he did that, he said, I'm not getting back into this, these types of movies. No, more of this shit. All right, number two, and you mentioned this one. Boy. I don't know if it gets even worse than this.
Two.
Superman IV, The Quest for Peace. Ugh. Oh, man. We know this one very well. Now, this was a movie that was taken over by Canon Films, the infamous Canon Films guys.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how originally with Superman IV, The Quest for Peace, it was originally under the umbrella of the brothers, or the father-son team that originally ran Superman 1, 2, and 3. Alexander Salkind and his son, Elia, I want to say is how it's pronounced. The Salkind and his son assumed the Superman films, and they had after the first three, they started to feel like it may have ran its course, and Christopher Reeves was slated to make a cameo in Supergirl, 1984 Supergirl, but he was unavailable. I wonder if he just took one look at the script, and then he said, told his agent, hey, I'm going to be out of town that week.
Yeah.
So that film was a box office failure, Supergirl. 2 years later, Elia Salkind sold the Superman franchise to Golan and Globus, the infamous partners at Canon Films.
Yes,
and
Canon Films.
You know about the Electric Boogaloo documentary on Netflix?
I actually saw the premiere of that at Fantastic Fest 2 years ago.
So there, and that kind of explains it all. If you ever had question marks about what the hell was going on with the Masters of the Universe movie, what the hell was going on
all
with
those Chuck Norris movies.
All those Chuck Norris movies that were being made. And then, of course, Superman IV, The Quest for Peace. If you're wondering what in the hell, how do you get from Superman II to Superman IV, if you're ever wondering how that happened, then you need to see that documentary, Electric Boogaloo. It's all about the debauchery and wackiness that was going on at Canon Films. And then they actually made their own version of a documentary about themselves, and it was sort of as a response to Electric Boogaloo, which I have not seen that yet. But I have not either. I'm looking forward to seeing what they come up with, their own telling of the story.
Yeah.
But they took over after the – and I'm surprised the Salkinds had the – rights to sell it, that it wouldn't have been under like Warner Brothers,
right? And it would have like reverted back or something.
Somehow it would have reverted back, kind of like they did with the Spider-Man. If they didn't make a Spider-Man movie within a certain window, Sony,
right,
then they would lose the rights, and it would be defaulted.
Same thing with like Fantastic Four with Fox, X-Men with Fox.
Maybe the contracts and deals were done up a little differently back in the 70s.
Could be.
It could be. But I was surprised it wouldn't just gone back to DC to make a decision who they wanted to sell it to. They had bought it. They had it enough. They had more years left on their contract. And maybe in their contract, during that window of time, they could do whatever they want with it.
Actually, you know what? Now that I'm thinking about it, I don't think Time Warner owned DC Comics yet.
Because now they own...
They own DC Comics. Just like Disney owns Marvel Comics, Time Warner owns DC Comics. So that's why Warner Brothers Pictures, which is also a Time Warner company, that's why all movies have to go through them.
Mm. I'm surprised Time Warner is getting out of the cable business. They're getting out of cable business, aren't they? Weren't they taken over by another entity?
The actual cable portion?
The cable portion.
Could be.
Yeah, I'm still trying to sort that all out, figure out what that's going on. I think most of the subscribers of Time Warner are still trying to sort that out. We'll get more answers over time on that. We have a squeaking dog in the background. If you hear that, that's not nails going down a chalkboard.
No.
That's an impatient dog being left downstairs outside the gate.
Yes. But, yeah, on Superman IV, I recently watched... What does he call it? A Chris Stuckman review, a hilariosity, where he did for Quest for Peace, and he talks about the Canon films, and he goes, there's what he shows it. He goes, this one shot of Superman going like this happens like six times in the film.
Yes, and that's I've got the Honest trailer where they talked about that too. Let's see.
From the production company behind Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo, comes a Superman movie so bad, it'll likely kill the entire franchise for 19 years.
All right, stop! Stop! That's enough!
Superman 4, The Quest for Peace. Christopher Reeve is back for one last paycheck as Superman in one of the corniest movies of the decade.
I hope they paid him good.
Yeah, they better have.
Because he says this movie ended his career.
I wouldn't doubt it, doing a movie that horrible.
I mean, the late Christopher Reeves.
which is saying a lot since this is the 80s.
The name of the game is making money.
Watch as this mild-mannered dork turns into this mild-mannered dork.
I'd like all the people back there to know that our subway system is still the safest and most reliable means of public transportation.
Recoil in horror at the return of mentally unstable actress Margot Kidder.
Superman!
As she struggles to play Lois Lane.
He's doing his best to make sure that it'll be all right for the rest of them.
Yeesh.
She didn't. She looked like she was barely making it through this movie.
Yes, yes. She looked like she is about to have a mental breakdown.
Yeah, which she had and she was. I can barely get through this movie.
And Gene Hackman returning as Lex Luthor, an evil genius who can't pronounce the word nuclear.
Nuclear power, nuclear strategist, nuclear bomb, nuclear warhead, nuclear man.
The quest for peace begins when this dumb, overdubbed kid.
I tell you, I'd write a letter to that would do some good.
Who, Santa Claus?
No, Superman.
Guilt Superman into collecting all of the world's nuclear weapons that he'll stuff into this big net and throw into the sun, which somehow the UN is totally cool with. Confused? Just wait. We're only getting started. Watch as Lex and Ducky from Pretty in Pink easily cut Superman's indestructible hair, strap it onto a missile, and launch it into the sun to inexplicably create Nuclear Man.
Destroy Superman now.
Behold the
Nuclear Man, played by Shadow Stevens.
Or side of two grown men in spandex going toe-to-toe in some of the most poorly executed sissy fights ever put to celluloid. Wow, this is bad. This is really bad. What the heck was that? What is this, space tag? Nails? Really? Come on, you're Superman. Do something. That looks terrible. He scratched him? Superman lost from a scratch? That made no sense.
Oh my God. You know. Yeah, they. You would think they could have brought in, like, because they had Chuck Norris already on contract over at Canon Films, that they could have brought him in to help choreograph some of these fight scenes to where they looked a little bit more masculine. And
they did look like a couple of girls just rolling around together.
And he would have immediately came in and said, no, you guys are going to have to change this up a little bit.
Have this guy just scratch another man.
Scratch another man. Yeah, that was probably the problem there, was that they got Shadow Stevens to be the villain.
Wearing, like, shiny black spandex.
Yeah, with a big star and was it a football on his chest as his logo? I don't know. The Super Bowl trophy? I don't know. I don't know what that is in the back. Yeah, and so it was also Christopher Reeves at the premiere apparently pulls John Cryer aside, who plays Lex Luthor's nephew in the movie. And he says, this movie's going to be really, really bad. He says, just want to give you a heads up. I really enjoyed working with you and Gene Hackman, but this movie's awful. So he took him aside. And of course, everybody always knew Christopher Reeves to just be a really classy, super top-notch guy. Mm-hmm. Had an unfortunate accident and ended up ending his life early. He was Superman the way he survived and held on for a long time.
Yeah.
With the disability that it caused him from the horse riding accident. But but this movie was the first catastrophe in his life.
Yes.
The horse accident was a second catastrophe, but this was the first one. Yeah, so he was like, afterwards, he was like, yeah, this is going to be really bad. It's 12% on Rotten Tomatoes, 2.9 out of 10 based on 41 reviews. 41 people that took the time to actually review it.
They probably just did so that the title of their story in the newspaper the next day has Superman in the title.
It's got the 50 worst movies ever by Empire Magazine. It was nominated for 2 Golden Raspberry Awards: Worst Supporting Actress for Mariel Hemingway, as lost to Daryl Hannah for Wall Street, really, and Worst Visual Effects, lost to Jaws Revenge. There you go. Which I think it got robbed. I think it was actually worse visual effects than Jaws Revenge.
Those Canon movies were made on like shoestring budgets.
Yes, there was a thing, because they would have like 60 movies being made simultaneously going on at the same time, so their budget would get so spread thin.
But they didn't care, because they would spend $500,000 on a movie and it would make $1.5 million.
Their formula. That was to make like really cheap movies and knowing they were going to turn a profit by releasing them and then putting them out, and then they'd make any a little bit of money was going to be profit.
It was kind of, it's the same kind of principle that they used to use back in the 50s, 40s and 50s when there were a ton of just, instead of these big giant companies, you just had a ton of little companies, and then you had like three big ones. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And those little ones, that's all they would do. They would spend $10,000 on a movie. It would turn around and make 20. Fine.
There were some deleted scenes that was mentioned that were deleted from the original cut, including a scene depicting Clark Kent visiting the graves of his foster parents. The scene was to have preceded the film's theatrical scene where Clark returns to Smallville to meet the contractor in hopes of selling or leasing the Kent farm. A deleted scene about Lacey Warfield's and Clark Kent's romance, showing them dancing in the Metro Club. I think they used Crazy Lois Lane a lot less in this movie, didn't they?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Because she was having some mental breakdowns. She was like passing out in people's backyards, I think, at the time, and showing up in different places naked. It was like crazier than Mariah Carey like walking uninvited on the set of TRL.
Where's my spot? I got a present for you.
Okay.
Wait, where am I supposed to stand for this?
Stand? I don't know. What are you doing here is the question.
I'm here. Can you hold this?
Yeah, sure.
I brought you a present. It's this shirt.
Yes, of course it does. What are you doing? Oh, my God. What are you doing?
But the problem is, if you don't have ice cream in your life, sometimes you just might go a little bit crazy.
And that's a metaphor
I'm not doing
for a lot
that.
More,
Do you guys
I'm
like
sure.
my shirt?
Yes, we love what you're wearing, Mariah.
It was like crazier than that.
Yeah, crazier than Carrie Fisher.
Oh, no, Carrie Fisher has nothing on Margot Kidder. All right, number one.
1-0.
The worst of the worst, the worst, the worst, worst, worst of my worst sequels that should have never happened. Blues Brothers 2.
Oh, that is a bad one.
Oh, man. And I was such a huge fan of the original Blues Brothers. Blues Brothers.
Blues Brothers.
I like the Blues Brothers, but I love the Blues Brothers. Yeah. The original Blues Brothers, to me, is classic. Dan Aykroyd, John Belushi.
Mm-hmm.
It was based off of their Saturday Night Live characters that were breakout characters. That may be, and I'm pretty sure I want to say it was the first movie that they made based off Saturday Night Live characters, and that became kind of a thing then later on where they were making Saturday Night Live. A lot of movies have been made out of Saturday Night Live characters, and they're still doing it because with the new pop star movie that's coming out, that's based off of the Lonely Island videos.
Mm-hmm.
The sort of the character that...
Yeah, the little webisode music videos.
Mm-hmm, they created a script and a story and a character around that.
You usually have like a big star.
Mm-hmm. Guest. Has a cameo. And so he came back on SNL and they did a new one video that they made. And actually that one's getting great reviews. It's 80% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, wow.
Pop stars, yeah. So I'm going to try to see it this weekend. It's out right now. But yeah, so now they've done the Catholic Girl. They've done one off of the Coneheads movie. That one kind of came late. They waited too long on the Coneheads movie. It had already been way past the time the Coneheads were sort of, you know, in the pot. But the best maybe Wayne's World and Wayne's World 2 of all the Saturday Night Live movies that they've turned into, Saturday Night Live characters that have been turned into movies. That's probably, I think those were the best movies.
Oh, yeah.
I think there should have been a Wayne's World 3. I think they could have made it.
I would have watched it.
Yeah, people would have. They had a good script. They could have come up with a good Wayne's World 3 for sure.
Yeah, well, I think by that time Mike Myers was kind of in the prime.
Yeah,
so he was doing the Austin Powers and all that other stuff. So
yeah, and now maybe they're getting a little. They're too old to do it. If they could come up with a good script, I know they wanted to do a Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventures 3, and that's been sort of in the talks for like 3 or 4 years. Keanu Reeves says, "Yeah, we're going to do it," but it's just. I think it's just a matter of getting in position with the studio in the right time and right place to get that made. But they said, we have a great script. We have a great idea. Everybody's on board. There'll be no George Carlin, though, which was to me, it'll be a huge absence in making that. So that's it. There it is. Blues Brothers 2. Terrible sequel. And, that could have been a good sequel. They could have got a good... Even without... I know the other big problem with that movie, too, is you don't have John Belushi.
Wait, come on, man. I got a cheeseburger cooling.
Buster, I'm sorry. Now you're going to have to see a bad side of me. Mac, your shaving cream, please.
So none of you is driving the Ford out there?
Still, if you had a good... come up with a good idea and developed it, but it was just really... it was awful.
Yeah, especially compared to what what it was before that.
Maybe it was too late. Maybe they waited too long on it. Maybe it could have been a better sequel if they had put it out a little bit sooner.
Could have been.
Yeah, sometimes that can have an impact on things. But you can make a really good sequel several years away from the one that...
How many years was that between those?
Oh, I see. That one was...
Because that was in 2000, and then the one with Belushi was that late 80s?
No, 70s.
Oh. So.
I think it would have been late 70s.
So over 20 years. Yeah. Because basically, people went from seeing these characters pretty regularly, and then now you're going 20 years. Now you're in a completely different generation.
Yeah. And so sometimes a series... I thought they did well with Dumb and Dumber. That one took a long time for them to make a Dumb and Dumber sequel.
I mean, they did have the one in between where they went backwards.
Prequel.
Mm-hmm, yeah. The prequel.
With a different cast. So there was something as far as Dumb and Dumber content that had been put out between the two. But I know some people didn't like Dumb and Dumber 2. I really liked Dumb and Dumber 2. I don't know how it scores overall on the Rotten Tomatoes, but I really enjoyed thought maybe the original was still the better.
Oh yeah.
But I didn't think it was a disappointment. Like, no. I was not disappointed in the entertainment value that I got from my experience.
Yeah, it's not like Quest for Peace or Batman and Robin.
Or Blues Brothers 2 for that matter. Wasn't near a disaster to that degree. Okay, when we come back, we have Agree or Disagree for Mr. Johnny Lightfoot.
Dun, dun. Do
do do do do do do do do do do do do break do do time. No.
What's gonna get a sequel next? What's gonna get a prequel next? And what's gonna get a reboot next? Sequel, prequel, reboot time. A reboot time. The shit is getting real. Oh yes, things getting serious. Dude, did you hear what I said? The shit just got real.
Yes, indeed. We are back, and it is time for that game that you love so much. Oh, come on. You know you love it. You know you want some more of it. Come on, baby. It's time for Agree or Disagree.
Yes.
Number one, we now know that J.K. Simmons, you know, will now be stepping into the role of Commissioner Gordon in the new Justice League movie.
Yes.
However, as clever a casting move as this appears to be, when it's all said and done, will Dark Knight's Gary Oldman still be your favorite Commissioner Gordon? Agree or disagree?
Oh, man. That's so tough because you're talking about two really great working actors right now.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, it really depends on how they portray him. Now, the other thing is J.K. Simmons is putting up these images.
He's getting yoked.
Where he is big.
And one guy commented is like, why would Gotham City even need Batman when they've got that Commissioner Gordon that's that yoked up?
He's a heavyweight! Yeah, buddy! Lightweight!
I mean, he's working out like a madman.
And this is supposed to be an older Gordon? Good grief.
Yeah, he looks like... I thought he was... When I first saw the picture, I was like, oh, is he playing a superhero in the Justice League? Which superhero is he playing? No, he's playing Commissioner Gordon, and he's playing a yoked up Commissioner Gordon.
I mean, there is a series in the DC Comics recently as last year where Bruce Wayne went missing and Gordon took up the mantle as Batman for a little while. So I don't know. Gosh. If he plays more like he played in Whiplash as opposed to Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Because Gordon can't be like, what's his name in Spider-Man, you know?
Oh, the Dennis, the last version of Spider-Man?
Right, the Sam Raimi Spider-Man.
Yeah, with Dennis Leary?
No. The ones before that. Oh. The Sam Raimi's J.K. Simmons was...
Oh, J.K. Simmons in
the... Was the newsroom...
That's right.
...editor guy.
Yeah. Which was very... So many of you know J.K. Simmons. Before Whiplash, he's the Farmers Insurance TV commercial guy. And he's still doing the Farmers Insurance TV commercial.
Yes.
Although on some new commercials now, he's going to probably rip that suit trying to put it on with his muscles. I mean, he's getting that... He's probably going to break stuff, and then he's going to say, but you got Farmers Insurance, even though I broke all your stuff with my muscles.
Yeah.
Let's see.
tomorrow, you may think you're covered for this, but not for this. For this. For this. Or that. Talk to farmers and see what gaps could be hiding in your coverage.
We are farmers.
I mean, I will say his voice definitely sounds more like the voice of an old cop.
Yeah, he does have that voice down.
Gary Oldman's was a little more fatherly.
Yeah.
Very somber.
Yeah.
But I think they're both going to do great, but I'm going to give the nod to Gary.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he's trying to get out of his farmer's insurance deal now that he's starting to make it out in movies? He just wants to kind of sit, but he's probably got a contract.
He's probably in a contract where he has to do like 15 or 20 or however many.
Or do you think he just doesn't care because he's making that cheddar no matter what?
I mean, he basically probably just goes in the studio one day for 2 hours. Mm-hmm.
And knocks out a year, the whole year's commercials. A
bunch of commercials, yeah.
Yeah, for the whole year. So it's probably a day's work for a lot of money. All right, so that one there. Okay, number two. Chewbacca Mask Lady, Candace Pink. Actually, hold on. Okay, on this one, I'm going to sound a little muffled because I've got my Chewbacca mask. Chewbacca, I'm going to try to ask this question as with the Chewbacca mask on. Chewbacca Mask Lady. Okay, that's my new Chewbacca mask. Chewbacca Mask Lady, Candace Payne, has received $420,000 in gifts since her video went viral on Facebook.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. She also has become a frequenter on the red carpet and talk show circuits. Should Oprah Winfrey of the OWN Network be in contact with her to develop a reality talk show that shows her demonstrating the simple pleasures in life and their joys? You agree or disagree on that?
I agree. I mean, she's already doing it anyways. She's getting all this money. Oprah might as well have somebody who obviously believes in these simple joys in life, so... Shit. Oprah, just every episode, just hook her up with something joyful and let's see what she reacts.
It's so great. I can't wait to show you. And I can't wait to show you.
Let her run with it. Like, yep. Travel around. I'm thinking she travels around, goes to different cities. They have people submit their suggestions on what brings them simple joys to life. And then have Candace Payne, you know, just plop in. There she is. She's going to, you know, kind of be the host of this sort of reality even talk show
just
platform.
Even if it's just a segment in a different show, just every week or every episode, you just have a little segment where she does maybe a 15-minute something where she shows you the joy and then talks about it. I don't know.
Okay, number three. A research study in Australia polled 1,000 people to determine what the ugliest color in the world was. They determined it to be a Patone 448C. Did they get it right? Apparently this color is so bad, people associate it with death and things that are dirty.
Oh my goodness.
Do you know what a Patone hue? I'll show it to you what it looks like.
I can't believe so many people even figured to even pick that.
Okay, so this is the world's ugliest color, and they say it's on a mission. It's sort of along this line here, this Patone color. More like kind of like an army green or an olive green. Did they get that right?
I mean, it is kind of like a pute. Green, like a baby food, looking like a green bean baby food. Honestly, I think like that pukey yellow color.
Oh, that I know what you're talking about. That
like
color,
a real deep mustardy color.
Because you associate that with the puke, which is
that,
sort of
that pukey yellow color.
For me, I associate like poop brown as poop being the brown. Worst color because, you know, I associate it with poop, with shit. Like that shit on the ground over there, that's like the sickest and grossest thing I could come up with or think of, but the puke's a good angle too. So you probably not. You're going more the mustard angle.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never understand why that color ever comes into fashion because it's just the most god-awful color.
Yeah.
It's just like when they get bored with good colors, they have to go to the bad colors for a style.
Yeah, and that color just doesn't work with any color of skin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that...
Brown, white.
The one color you're wearing, a blue, Texas, like a royal blue, the Texas Rangers shirt. The royal blue, I think, is known to be the color that the most people look the best in.
Well, it's also, and a lot of people don't know this, what TV manufacturers do. That's why when I sold TVs, we always recommended calibrations. TV manufacturers actually, so you have the spectrum of colors. Basically, televisions, you have RGB, so you have blue, yellow, red, and then the green. So you have the three primaries, and then they add green. So on all of those, they're usually pretty balanced, but they do up the blue hue in the processor of the TV, because as a people, and they up the brightness, as a people, we don't even realize that the blues are actually enhanced on the TV, but we're more drawn to it.
Interesting.
Because blue is just a visually more striking color. And then so when we would take people to a television that has been calibrated and a television that has not, and we say, which one do you think looks better? They always point to the one that's not. And I'll have like a scene in snow playing, like maybe a polar bear or something.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll be like, so you like your snow blue? Like, that's why ice and snow always look a little tint of blue on uncalibrated televisions.
Interesting. Yeah, and the colors are used so often, like that and in other ways, for creating a certain marketing effect. Like in food and restaurants, they believe that, I think, red and yellow is the colors known to make people hungry the most frequently. And it's which is why you've seen it for so long on McDonald's sign, that red and yellow, and...
Right.
It's used at other restaurants as well.
And then the one food that most people are more detracted from is green. That's why, to make the plate look a little nicer, because I was a chef for a little while, to make it more appealing color-wise, to make it not just look like a splatting of browns, reds. That's why you always have that little garnish on there.
And purple makes me want to listen to Prince songs.
Yep.
If I'm watching the Kansas City Chiefs on TV, I'm hungry. Makes me want to eat. All right. So there it is, the agree or disagree segment for episode number 18. And when we come back, I got a little thought and a little advice for those booties. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And we're back with Johnny Lightfoot, Stephen Pressley, Thunder Pop in the Thunder Pop Dome. All right, here it is, a little thoughts and advice for those asses.
Smack it.
As Samuel Jackson would say, Samuel L. Jackson would say. All right, here it is. I've got a huge issue with something, and it's about something to do with social media. All right. Joint Facebook accounts. Have you ever seen these people? They get into relationships and they merge their Facebook accounts together, and they do a single Facebook page for the couple.
Yeah.
It's just that nothing creeps me out more. If I get a friend request ever again from a couple, like two people that want to add me, and it's people I know, whether people I know or don't, I'm not going to add them, because there's something creepy. There's something creepy about it. I'll tell you what's creepy about it. The guy, it's either the guy or the girl, it could be either or, that wants to have a joint Facebook account with their partner is probably a psycho, Mr. like the most jealous psycho.
Like, how do you even answer that? It's...
And it's just like, who am I? Is it they want to read each other's email? They want to keep track of each other's posts so much that they want to do a joint Facebook account, and they want to make sure the world absolutely knows that they're both taken with each other. Yeah. You know what? Just stay that way. Keep being taken with each other. I had a friend I went to high school with, and she was really active on social media, keeping in touch with all of her old classmates. And she was, you know... She was on there, and we would always hear from her, and it was always nice to hear from her. She was, you know...
Plenty of posting.
And then all of a sudden, she gets into a relationship, and she removes her existing account and reestablishes an account with her new guy that she was in a relationship with. and they had this joint Facebook account, and it just something about it just felt really like creepy. Like it was just like somebody in that relationship is just very insecure,
yes,
and extremely psycho and jealous, and probably follows the other person and has the other person tracked somehow with like a tracking spy device on their car.
Yeah, and the type of people that know the passwords to the Find My iPhone so they can log in and look at the map.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and you know that's very possible. You being in working in the smartphones and industry, you know what is possible and not possible in terms of like being able to keep track.
Seeing some of the things on these people's phones, like when we transfer their information, seeing some of this
stuff. Oh, gosh.
You can't unsee some of this.
Jeez. Man, I gotta check my phone before I go for my update.
Yeah.
For my next phone.
Yeah, you wouldn't be like a guy with a dick pic with a ghost costume on it.
Oh, that happened. That's a real thing that happened.
That is a real thing. And
how do you keep a straight face when you're there and you're
and
you're,
the guy is he's older gentleman and he's standing 5 feet away from you.
Yeah, that becomes part of your training as a professional. Is being able to keep a straight face under those circumstances, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and there was all years ago when people were still going and taking pictures and then taking them to a photo lab to get them developed.
Mm.
If you were taking pictures that were scandalous, the photo lab person...
Oh, yeah, they're going to see it.
And you, but then you knew that. You knew that when you were taking right. pictures to get developed. So unless you were a professional or a semi-professional type photographer that developed your own film
mm-hmm.
and had your own photo lab... Or you would go to a photo lab on your own to do your own developing.
Yeah.
If you were taking those pictures down to the quickie photo lab.
Yeah.
You were. And now, those are almost all but gone. I think there's mm-hmm. a few of them like in drugstores.
Yeah. Or like if I ever want a printout of a picture, mm-hmm. usually you can go to like the Walmart or the Walgreens website.
The machine.
And then just upload it and then go, say, hey, can this be done by 2? And then just go to the store and pick it up.
Yeah. And we're even more used to like giving out our privacy mm-hmm. of our lives than we used to be. I mean, things that people used to keep in their diaries that they kept hidden under their mattress or their bed, they're willing to post that on Facebook now.
Yeah.
So it's a different world. We're not in Kansas anymore.
Everybody's posting their thoughts when something happens in their life, good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
They're letting everybody know.
It goes to the wall.
But yeah, to that joint Facebook. Yeah,
oh, creepy.
I don't know about
creepy
that.
People. So somebody in that relationship is a total psycho. They're stalking the other, and you fell for it, and you're in that, and I'm really worried about you. You both need some Dr. Phil.
Yeah.
Do you realize that this is a big problem?
And honestly, that's not going to end well. That situation is not going to end well. When I see a joint Facebook account, I say, this is not going to end well. This is not a healthy couple.
No, because if you're that worried that to where you don't think you can just ask your significant other a question.
Exactly.
Then something's miswired in your head.
You're hedging your bets there big time. I'm going to tell you that right now. So, yeah, don't do it, people. Don't request me if you're in a joint Facebook account. I don't want to add you. You're creeping me out. It's worse.
Because then somebody you don't know can also see your posts.
Yeah, and I don't know the other person, so suddenly they're in my linked up to me,
mm-hmm.
and that person's a psycho.
Mm-hmm.
They're a stalker. They're probably also a killer.
Yes.
In the future, so not to put a thought crime on them or anything, but it's an assumption crime.
Yes, very much so.
But it's inevitable to happen. All right, there's a little thoughts and advice for those asses in the Thunderpop Dome. I want to thank Johnny Lightfoot, number
always
18. Yeah, always a pleasure, sir. And Boy Wonder broadcast on YouTube. He's going to be dropping some new videos like all summer long.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go with that. And we're looking forward to coming up Han Solo, Black Series. We've got
Civil War Cap.
Civil War. I can't wait to see the Civil War Cap because that one is one that was sort of happened on accident. You sort of stumbled mm-hmm. onto that.
I didn't know it was out yet.
It was just a lucky break. And then for myself, I love my new Chewbacca mask. Very excited about my new Chewbacca mask. All right. We will be back to do the second part of this episode very soon. It'll be episode number 19, where we're going to talk about the sequels that had not happened that should have happened.
Yes.
The wish list of the sequels that we want that they haven't made. We want to know where they're at. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's coming up. So everyone have a wonderful day, hour, month, second, Chinese calendar, whatever, what other thing they want to have, right?
Yes. Anything about your day life, the joys, what is it, the joys in...
The simple joys.
Simple joys.
As long as you're not having them with other people as a joint account on Facebook.
Yes, yes.
Then you can do that.
The word is joy, not joint.
All right, we'll be back sometime soon. Peace out.
I lied.
And Thunderpop is a Hit the Bricks production.